So good morning, everybody. Welcome to another conversation in Turning Towards Life. It's Sunday morning in London, 9 a.m. We're back on our normal time schedule, and we are really delighted to have you with us. We've got a fantastic source this morning from the work of Parker Palmer. So I'm not going to say very much for the moment. I'm going to hand straight over to Lizzie. Morning, Lizzie.
Hello. Hi, everybody. So for those of you who were with us last week, we got to talking about transparency and community. And it was a piece of Parker Palmer's work that had come to me in the middle of our chat around what it really takes to be in community. And I carried on reading Parker Palmer's book, The Courage to Teach, which I've read a couple of times. And I think it's one of those books that you can read 100 times and you still receive more and more from it. And so in the tracing back to see if I could find the piece that I was looking for on community, I found this piece around identity and integrity that felt like it really reached out in the spirit of what it is that we speak about when we're talking about this kind of transparency and community. And this book is around teaching and what it takes to be a teacher, and in a conscious, very super conscious, healthy power way, Parker Palmer brings us his philosophy and learning and practical experience around genuine teaching, not from your positional power, but from your integrity and identity, teaching from those places rather than this kind of positional place that by default means that you're powerful, but it doesn't genuinely mean that you're powerful in other people's worlds. At least this is my interpretation of what he's saying in part. And so I wanted to bring this because, of course, it relates to us in our capacity to teach, but it seems to me that it puts the relationship to other people at the heart. It puts the world combined with us as a human being at the heart of our inquiry. And these three paragraphs seem to feel like they were kind of short enough and manageable enough for us to talk about, because Justin, we continue to have these conversations where there's so much that we bring in our sources that we could talk for like days on each of them if we really took each part. So I was trying to find something within the book that felt like it was contained and also that related to this inquiry of what it is to be a human being and to be in relationship with other people, be in relationship with the world and ourselves, and to hold on to the thread of our own self-discovery when we're in a set of circumstances, as we always are, that we are thrown into every day, and be ourselves, basically. And how do I do this? And what do I need to be conscious of and remember in my self-remembering in terms of the complexity that I'm a part of and that I got made by? And this kind of wholeness, this more spiritual inquiry as to the deeper truth of my identity in amongst the complexity of being a personality and a human being. So there's three paragraphs. And Justin, would you like to read first and I'll read second? Is that
all right? Start first. I'm grateful for you talking about Parker Palmer's work in the way that you did, Lizzie. Mm. And I want to add something. So I'm a huge advocate for this book, The Courage to Teach. I made sure I had a copy here so that people could see it. And a couple of things that I love about, I imagine that we might find a way to bring Parker Palmer's work in more and more to what we're doing, because he's such a stand for the absolute necessity of bringing all of ourselves into whatever it is that we're doing, teaching, which most of us are teaching in some way or another, no matter what it is that we're doing in life. And one of the points that he makes so repeatedly that I think is so important to this work that we're doing here, Lizzie, in these conversations, is how difficult it is to bring all of us. It feels much safer to bring the part of us that is secure or powerful or knowledgeable or knows what to do. And in doing so, to leave most of us out, primarily I'm thinking about all the ways in which we're afraid and which we don't know and in which we're confused and all of that. And the more that we only bring part of ourselves, we only allow in part of others. And he tells this amazing story in the book, which you'll probably remember, Lizzie, where he's working as a consultant in a secondary school in the States. And they're in a meeting with all the teachers in the school, and everyone's bemoaning how lifeless, disinterested, irresponsible, tuned out all the children are in the school. And they're having a meeting in a glass meeting room. And whilst they're in the meeting, all the children, the pupils of the school come out on break time. And there's so much aliveness going on around them. And Parker Palmer finds himself looking out through the glass windows of the meeting room at this extraordinary aliveness and vitality that's around him. And it becomes incredibly obvious to him at that moment. And I love the way that he says there's a way in which it hadn't been obvious to him up until this point, but there's no lack of aliveness here. It's simply that it's not showing up in the classroom. And if it's not showing up in the classroom, the question that the teachers have to ask themselves is, what's the way that they're being that has everyone be so bored and so afraid and so withheld and so scared to speak up and be themselves? And I think that that's really the question for all of us. You know, it's particularly a question for people who are coaches and who are teachers, and we are both of those in our work, but it's also a question for parents and for people who lead things and for people who write things and for people who are politicians and, you know, people who are parents, any walk of life. This is the question. And so in the end, I think it's a question about aliveness that's in the background here as well. So I wanted to bring that in and be an enormous advocate for all of us, everyone who's part of this, seek out this book. So shall I read the part that you've chosen?
Yes, that'd be great.
He's talking about identity here. By identity, I mean an evolving nexus where all the forces that constitute my life converge in the mystery of self. My genetic makeup, the nature of the man and woman who gave me life, the culture in which I was raised, people who have sustained me and people who have done me harm, the good and ill I have done to others and myself, the experience of love and suffering and much, much more. In the midst of that complex field, identity is a moving intersection in the inner and outer forces that make me who I am, convening in the irreducible mystery of being human. By integrity, I mean whatever wholeness I'm able to find within that nexus as its vectors form and reform the pattern of my life. Integrity requires that I discern what is integral to my selfhood, what fits and what does not, and that I choose life-giving ways of relating to the forces that converge within me. Do I welcome them or fear them, embrace them or reject them, move with them or against them? By choosing integrity, I become more whole. But wholeness does not mean perfection. It means becoming more real by acknowledging the whole of who I am. Identity and integrity are not the granite from which fictional heroes are hewn. They are subtle dimensions of the complex, demanding, and lifelong process of self-discovery. Identity lies in the intersection of the diverse forces that make up my life. And integrity lies in relating to those forces in ways that bring me wholeness and life, rather than fragmentation and death. Oh, Lizzie, you're muted. We can't hear you.
There you are. Sorry. This really feels like to read it twice is deeply necessary. I knew we were going to do that anyway, but I'm thinking, my goodness, there's so much in here, even though I've read it quite a few times now. So here goes. By identity, I mean an evolving nexus where all the forces that constitute my life converge in the mystery of self. My genetic makeup, the nature of the man and woman who gave me life, the culture in which I was raised, people who have sustained me and people who have done me harm, the good and ill I have done to others and myself, the experience of love and suffering, and much, much more. In the midst of that complex field, identity is a moving intersection of the inner and outer forces that make me who I am, convening in the irreducible mystery of being human. By integrity, I mean whatever wholeness I am able to find within that nexus, as its vectors form and reform the pattern of my life. Integrity requires that I discern what is integral to my selfhood, what fits and what does not, and that I choose life-giving ways of relating to the forces that converge within me. Do I welcome them or fear them, embrace them or reject them, move with them or against them? By choosing integrity, I become more whole. But wholeness does not mean perfection. It means becoming more real by acknowledging the whole of who I am. Identity and integrity are not the granite from which fictional heroes are hewn. They are subtle dimensions of the complex, demanding, and lifelong process of self-discovery. Identity lies in the intersection of the diverse forces that make up my life, and integrity lies in relating to those forces in ways that bring me wholeness and life rather than fragmentation and death.
There's so much in here, isn't there?
There's a lot in here.
I wonder if we should... Well, where I would like to start off is talking about identity.
Mm.
And I think what's striking me about what Parker Palmer at least is saying is that there's no escaping that who we are, who we come to be, is the product of everything that's happened, including what happened before we even arrived. So in the lives and genetics of the people who brought us into the world in the first place.
Yeah.
Everything that's happened, but not just what's happened to us, like not what's just happened to me, but also what's happened from all the ways in which I've been in relationship to the world. Mm. What I've said and what I've done. He says, people who sustain me, the good and ill I've done to others and myself, all of this is identity. And what's striking me most about it at the moment is, so first of all, is there's no fixed identity. Like we're always being shaped again and again and again by both the world that we're in and by how we're being in the world.
Mm-hmm.
The first part of it. And the second part of it is that identity is never finished. It's never a fixed something, because at any moment in time, I can relate in a different way to what's happening, find some inner something that I'm not even in control of arising, finding myself in situation, in circumstances that I'm also not in control of. And this is why he says, identity is a moving intersection.
Mm.
And I find this really powerful, because this part of it, before he even gets on to what it means to live with integrity, which I think is a kind of responsibility that he's talking about, or a kind of responsiveness that he's talking about, to remember that we're never done. That the moment we say, I am this way, like, you know me, I'm this way, is to deny all the ways in which we're constantly a living flow and flux between inner and outer and inner. And I think that's the truth of that is incredibly liberating, because it means that to be a human being is a kind of, no matter what circumstances we find ourselves in, is a kind of freedom.
Mm.
And I'm glad for this because I know I often forget this. I said this last week when we were talking that I've been in the midst of studying freedom and slavery because it was Passover last week. And boy, the ways that I get convinced that I'm this. And so because I'm this, it means X, Y, and Z is going to happen. And I can't do this and this. And I forever have to be distant from this and this in myself. When actually, I think Parker Palmer is actually right, but it's so hard to remember.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as you're talking, Justin, it feels like an invitation that you're making in the saying of that, because as you say it, it makes sense. You know, you say we are continually shaped by the outer forces and we are shaping them, and that there's this thing happening. And so much of the time, we're not awake to what's happening. You know, we're not awake to the possibility that there is a way we can participate that gives us this freedom. It feels like we get, like, patterns, for example. You know, there are patterns of behavior, patterns of reaction, patterns of, oh my gosh, I cannot believe I'm in the same place again with my partner or my kids or my work. Like, how am I back here again? So many times we find ourselves kind of unconsciously in the same pit. And that's a powerful force. You know, there's momentum in it. There's momentum in our behavior. There's the part that Parker talks about in terms of our genetic makeup and who raised me and how I got to be here and the power of those formative times. And yet, there is this possibility that is offered to us with our consciousness, with our awareness of something other than our patterns, something other than those habitual responses. When we get present, when we start to see, start to bring things that are deeply embedded in the background into our hands so that we can see them and feel them and look at things, that a different possibility is born. But it's not a given that this is possible for everybody all the time. And so I'm feeling the depth and the seriousness of the invitation that I just received in this when you were speaking, which is that what does it mean to entertain that possibility? You know, it's like, it's kind of arresting, like, oh, hold on, if I take what you're saying and what Parker's saying seriously, that there is some capacity for me to have some awareness and decision-making around how I want the world to show up and how I might practice differently, that it might show up and that I might be shaping the world differently if I was practicing differently, shaping my world by being a different way, and what might those experiments be? It really is a complex field, you know, and I agree, this kind of, when he says the moving intersection, it does feel like this kind of movable feast all the time. And in lots of ways, a slow movable feast. There's a slowness about this process of self-discovery, like he's saying, a lifelong process that, in some ways, I think we've become so instantaneous in our expectations around changing something, like we would in an organization, or we'll just change this system. And somehow it's expected that everybody knows how to use the system and do what there is to do with it. And actually it takes time. Everything that shifts is a process. It's not an instantaneous switch or something. And sometimes I think we have such demands on ourselves that, you know, I can feel in myself, well, if this is possible, then why can't I just do something differently and then everything would be different? But it's also feeling this self-gentleness that would allow something to take the time that it might take, and it might never be done, but to accept that life is this ever-unfolding mystery that we can practice differently in, and we can have different kinds of relationships to what's happening in ourselves that will take time to unfold and undo themselves. And it's really complex. Identity is really, really, really complex. And it's mysterious too. So it's like, it's not like you can break it all down and put it together like a puzzle or something. There's many dimensions. And like you said, some things are from before we even had the kind of consciousness that we know is consciousness now, that flow through the generations and our ancestors and the stories that people have lived before us. So the complexity is so deep and so wide. And I think this is one of the, how I feel invited in this passage as well, is that it's kind of throwing me into the unknown and asking me to breathe into the nothingness that gets brought about by encountering these questions, by even entertaining the notion of identity. Is quite a big deal. You know, we kind of go around making cups of tea, typing emails, getting on the train, you know, whatever we're doing. And this is like, and that's why I love it, because it's like an arrest, it stops me. And like, oh, you know, what are we all doing? What's happening here? Who are we?
In the midst of our ordinariness is this, what he calls irreducible mystery of being human. And I love what you're saying about that our identities are at once fluid, ever-changing, but it's not like we can suddenly declare ourselves to be another way. Because we've been in this a long time, we've been living it, and the nature of being a person is that we're, as he's saying, also deeply shaped by everything that's happened and everything that we've brought into the world already is shaping us. And it's very easy, I think, you talked about being in a culture where things go very quickly. It's very easy then to kind of throw ourselves into one of two ends of a kind of polarity. And one end is, I'm fixed and I'm stuck and nothing can ever change. I am, and the world is just the way it is, which robs us of any kind of freedom or agency. Or to get into a kind of magical thinking, well, if I could just think something different, or if I just left my current situation and went somewhere else, everything would be different. And that's to deny or flatten this incredibly rich, complex, deep, moving mystery that's called identity, that has us be who we are. And that's why I love that he's paired these two. The identity is who I've come to be through all of this, and who I've come to be so far. And that integrity is how I respond to this mysterious shifting something that I turn out to be and the world turns out to be. That's where our space is in how we respond. Whatever wholeness I'm able to find within it, my taking care of what is life-giving, or he says this, isn't he, forces of death or of life in this. But that's the unique freedom that human beings have. We don't always have the freedom, partly because of what we've got ourselves committed to. We don't always have the freedom just to radically change everything. And even if we could, it wouldn't change that much in some ways. So it's so his idea of integrity has got a lot to do with, seems to me, with every moment when we're able to bring our conscious, responsible attention to ourselves and to our life, the choices that we make. And it reminds me, it's reminding me of two things. There's this idea that comes from Taoism that every step you make changes the path that you're walking on. But like the path isn't fixed. It's the path that you've been on is fixed in a way, but the next step you make changes the path. It doesn't change everything, but it changes the path. And there's also this amazing poem by Antonio Machado, Spanish, I think he was, poet where he says, path maker, the path is made by walking.
Mm-hmm.
So what do we have available to us every moment? The kind of integrity that's available is, where will I put my foot next? And can I, because it's not always, it's certainly not always easy, can I find the place to put my foot in this moment, right when I'm making a cup of tea, or I've been triggered by someone, or there's something, somebody in my classroom who's tuned out and I'm afraid because I'm afraid of what this means about my teaching.
Mm.
Can I find a place to put my foot that is respectful of who I am in this moment, doesn't have me abandon huge parts of myself, including, you know, all of the difficulty and all of the fear and all of that. And can I place my foot somewhere that will bring wholeness and life rather than fragmentation and death? And that pretty much is the choice that we have.
Mm. Yeah, and you know, you used that example of a student in the classroom, Justin, and it's just bringing me back to why Parker's saying this in the first place. And his experience and his teaching is that these questions, to be asking these questions that you and I are asking ourselves now, and to be transparent about the asking of them, is what it takes to teach, is what it takes to be the kind of person who can be in relationship with others in service of their development. I.e., we have to be in ours in order for people to be in theirs. And I feel like there's a kind of homecoming in his words for me that directly addresses the situation in the world right now of distorted notions and behaviors in powerful positional power. And if we were onto ourselves, if we were inquiring as to what this mystery of our identity is, if we were honest about our vulnerability, if we were questioning of ourselves in the midst of having to make an important decision, if we could show the transparency of our experience into the world that we're trying to develop, it would be a whole different ballgame. And of course, we're all afraid and we don't want people to see our inadequacies, and we don't want people to see we might be nervous, or we might not have it licked, or we might not have prepared 100%, or whatever the thing is. It feels like to be in these inquiries and to have the bravery to be ourselves in our relationships and to be this transparency feels like a real act of faith. And what an experiment to live as a human being that would have faith in something that wasn't control and command, but unfolding and trust and relationship and being inside the nature of relationship, that it might unfold the best outcome rather than me trying to engineer the best outcome with my ingenuity or my cognitive move making. But what if I could be transparent and one other could be transparent, and out of that is born an outcome that is best somehow, and trusting that bestness. I'm just really glad and moved that, I mean, this is, you know, I don't know when this book was written, but like a long, long time ago. And it feels like a kind of pioneering work that addresses what's happening now really directly.
When you said faith, what came to me was, maybe one of the kinds of faith that we can have is faith in our human capacity to respond.
Mm.
And that so often I'm thinking about times when, you know, you and I are coming into this conversation and bringing this particular conversation to the world, partly out of the kind of teaching that we do.
Yeah.
And I've been thinking about times when I've been teaching, both teaching coaching or teaching lots of different fields. Whenever the biggest pitfalls and the biggest hurts and the biggest difficulties in anyone learning things usually come when I stop having faith in that and start imagining that I have to be in charge or look good or know the answer.
Mm.
And the moment that I get afraid that I can't be any of those things, because most of the time I can't, that's when I want to hold on and when I want to push away parts of myself, but then of course push away parts of the people who are learning with me. And instead of being in conversation with one another, we're in some kind of game of domination.
Mm.
I'm trying to prove that I've got it all together.
Yeah.
So your call, which is also Parker Palmer's call to transparency, to what would it be to say to one another, I don't know, and here's my best response to this moment,
mm.
bringing everything, so bringing my intellectual and cognitive intelligence and the truth of the heart and whatever's going on with the body and whatever's going on in relationship between us and all of the history and all of that.
Mm.
Gosh, I don't know. Let's find out together.
Mm.
And then to welcome others into doing that with us.
Yeah.
That seems to me as part of the move. And that so much of what we do to try and be alive is actually fragmentation and death. So our misguided attempt, I'll die if I'm not in control here. So now I'll squeeze the life out of the situation so that we can all be safe. And I can be in control and I can look good and all of those kind of things, particularly if I'm being a teacher. They look like they're life-saving, but they're actually, I think somebody said this to me. I was in a conversation with somebody about this yesterday who said, you know, since when did anything life-giving and creative come out of trying to hold on to something so tight that you squeeze the life out of it? And yet, that's often what we do in a kind of, what we might think is a kind of integrity, but is not at all the kind of integrity that Parker Palmer's talking about, which is where we become more whole, which doesn't mean perfection. Maybe that's the line that's jumping out at me most strongly now, which is in this incredibly shifting, contingent world, it's so easy to try and hold on to, I have to be perfect, things have to be perfect, instead of, here we all are in the midst of this mystery, my goodness.
Yeah.
What's called for together now.
Yeah. And the huge world difference between perfection and realness. It's such an astonishingly different world to tune into what it feels like to require perfection versus to require realness in our relationships with one another as well. That I need you to do it right. I need you to do it well. I need you to be good versus... how are you now? What's happening? What's going on? Who are you? It's like the worlds just feel like worlds away, and they're both familiar worlds to me. And I notice that there is a corresponding contraction with the perfection world and a relaxing with the realness world. And just in the speaking of it right then, I could feel like, oh, when I need things to be a certain way, I feel like grasping and inwardly tense and determined in some way. And then when I'm curious and I'm open and I'm seeking real contact or wide-eyedly opening into something, there is like a kind of... a putting down, a relieving of burden, openness that expands and sheds rather than tries to cling or something. And I love this acknowledging the whole of who I am equating to realness. It just feels true. Like it feels that if I'm acknowledging all those different parts of myself, the mystery that the mystery entails. Firstly, I have to expand to be able to encounter a mystery. And the mystery also invites me to expand as well in terms of the horizon of my thinking or my seeing or my feeling. It shows me where my edges are of like, well, I can't feel that. I can't, you know, that's too much for me. That's too complex for me. And seeing if I can be in the edge of things rather than seeing the edge and kind of contracting back and think, right, well, I better kind of nail this down, because if I can't control it, I need to kind of reduce things back down again so it's manageable or something. So it feels like a really beautiful painting of worlds that give me a concrete comparison of my own contraction versus my own expandedness in the world, and how I can cultivate that way of being, of opening into more and more, and watching myself when I get small and sharp and contracted and contained. Maybe sometimes those things are wholly necessary, and how wonderful if I would be able to choose those things rather than be habitually pulled into them, because that's the only way I know how to respond to life.
I think that's a really fabulous place on which to end. I'm so grateful for what you just said. I'm going to say it again, maybe in my own way, but what you just said, Lizzie, was maybe sometimes our contraction is necessary. But what really gets us into trouble is contraction as a habitual way of responding to life, not as a choice. And that's really what we've been talking about here this whole time, and this whole 6 months that we've been doing this project now.
Wow, six months.
Yeah, is how do we, with each step, relate, I'm going to read Parker Palmer's last line again, relate to the forces, these complex forces inside us, between us, around us, in ways that bring wholeness and life rather than fragmentation and death. And there's a choice, a really difficult, often, choice that requires all of our attentiveness and awareness and capacity. So thank you for bringing that to us. Close. I'm very grateful for this, and I'm just going to end by saying goodbye to everyone. Thank you so much for being with us. We are really thrilled to be doing this, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you, everybody. See you next week.